I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss, Ian Geist, Tim Weiland, and Max Foisy now joins us in the studio for the showbiz segment that we do every week in this hour. I will tell you ahead of time that if Max sounds a little bit odd today, it's because he has consumed an entire unicorn frappuccino from Starbucks today. That's that new pink and purple coffee thing.
Yes, pink and purple.
Yeah.
And it took me from about 10 a.m. today until probably 2 o'clock to finish just one grande unicorn frapp, because there's so much sugar. It has more than double your daily allowance of sugar.
And so you're crashing now.
And I just now started to crash. I'm having my first cup of coffee today, so I kind of even out a little bit.
Well, there's coffee in that thing, isn't there?
Yes. Yes, there's also caffeine with all that sugar, too. I don't normally do sweet things. I'm a spicy, salty guy. I'm not really a sugary guy. Mm-hmm. So it was doubly strange for me to try to choke this thing down. But I kept hearing about it. Of course, it's become this weird pop culture phenomenon.
Think it's hype.
Well, it was hype, but obviously just because Starbucks getting all this free advertising.
Yeah.
But it was something that the internet, people on the internet, said, hey, we should make this thing. And Starbucks said, okay, fine. And they're reaping all the benefits. The only conspiracy theory I could see is if those original posts were made by somebody up at Starbucks corporate.
No, which, that would never happen.
So I kept reading about how it changes colors as you drink it. So I had to keep drinking it.
And did it?
It's like melty ice cream, basically. But the strangest thing was it really did change flavor. It starts off tasting like Smarties, like you just smashed a bunch of Smarties in your fist. Mm-hmm. Then it goes very Fruit Loops. For most of the duration, it's Fruit Loops.
Oh.
And then once the colors really start cruising, it becomes like a cotton candy type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the worst part of the drink, where I really didn't know if I was going to be able to finish it all, is the very, very last part where it's just complete sugar. It's just like you're in a refinery.
Yeah.
And you're just snorting sugar.
You don't sound like you had a lot of sugar today. You don't sound like
I'm talking very fast. The one criticism I always get is I'm talking fast. Well, I'm going to be like the Micro Machines guy. I'm talking very fast.
Dan, you once dated a girl who went kind of Fruit Loops, didn't you?
Several.
Fruit Loops. Most of the duration was Fruit Loops. So this thing is gone, though, after this weekend. So if you want one on Monday, you're out of luck.
Darn.
I know, right?
Am I going to miss out on that phenomenon, too?
If you want to
see... Oh, darn.
If you would like to see me make faces, my actual face when I first tried this, you can go to the KTRS Facebook, because that's why I did this, was for the KTRS Facebook.
Trying to create a viral video drink.
Trying to create something that just my coworkers could laugh at and make fun of me, which they've done all day.
I'll tell you, if you want to get me to avoid a product, all you got to do is tell me this is viral or it's the new hot fad. I'm not interested.
You're out.
Not going to have it.
Yeah.
Not even for a start.
That's what they should name a drink. Hot fad. The new hot fad.
I'll take a hot fad, please.
Yeah.
On the double.
Let's get to the movies that are opening this week. There are 6 movies opening today. Why so many at one time?
And why so few next week?
Can I talk about one that I saw?
They're not even screening the biggest movie for us, The Circle, which is very strange.
What's that?
That's the Dave Eggers book, which was adapted into a movie with Tom Hanks and Emma Watson.
Oh.
And they're not screening it for critics.
Wow.
I know.
You know what also didn't screen here? Colossal, which is this new movie with Anne Hathaway.
Which everybody says it's fantastic.
She was on James Corden last night. She was on Jimmy Fallon a couple of nights ago.
Yeah.
She's done a bunch of things. I can't even find where it's playing. I found it's only playing at the Tivoli.
I haven't read a single bad review. Not that that means anything, but I mean, it did, so far the consensus has been it's a great movie, and it's hardly playing here in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Just too bad.
All right, before we get to our movie reviews, Dan Strauss has a movie to review for us.
Going in Style. I saw that. Did you either one of you see that?
Yeah, we reviewed it a couple of weeks ago, and as I recall, we both hated it.
You hated it?
I really, 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 really hated it.
I didn't have as big of a problem as Paul, but Paul really hated it.
Wow, you really did hate it.
One of the worst of the year.
Really? I liked it.
But I know why you liked it. Because there's all sorts of goofy slapstick and silly stuff with old guys.
Yeah.
See, I came in... Did you ever see the original?
No.
With George Burns?
See, that's why...
And Lee Strasberg and Art Carney?
No.
Proves my point. This is great that Dan is doing this, because I said if you want to go watch these old cut-ups, cut up, you're going to have a fine time.
Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine.
Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
I didn't see the old one, the original.
Yeah.
And I just liked it. I just thought it was kind of fun.
Okay.
But that was it.
No, you don't have to apologize. You sound apologetic for it.
No, I'm not. I'm not apologizing.
Actually, Dan, it's one of the worst movies of the year. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah. Or not, but that's what... it probably is. But I've gone to see the worst movie of the year before and liked it.
Yes, that's okay. We have different tastes.
I know.
I'm right and you're wrong. It's okay. It's fine. Dan, it doesn't matter.
Have you seen Boss Baby yet?
No.
You need to go see Boss Baby.
I want to see Boss Baby next.
I think you'll like it.
And my daughter, we were going to go see it. My daughter was with us, and she even said her friend saw it, and it's not as funny as you would think it is. It's not as good as you would think it is.
What's that, Boss Baby?
Yes, Boss
no,
Baby.
No, I said in my review it was for six-year-olds.
I heard that,
and then you said you would like it, so that's why I think you should go see it.
I know. So I still want to go see it, but everybody's saying it's not all that great.
All right, well, let's get to the movies that are opening this week. As I mentioned, there are six of them. Neither Max nor I saw The Lost City of Z.
Nope.
We did not see Free Fire.
I wanted to.
And we did not see Born in China, which is a Disney documentary about cute pandas. What could possibly be bad about that?
I'm sure that early on, one of the pandas dies. Because when you had that movie Chimpanzee, and you had all these Disney nature movies, usually one of the cute creatures dies in the beginning.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. That's Disney. That's what they do.
Okay.
In animation and in live action, they have to kill somebody right away.
That's true. That's what the Lion King is all about.
It's a murderous studio, really, if you think about
Bambi's mother.
So Free Fire, both you and I on separate days tried to go see this thing and didn't work out for either one of us.
Right.
But I think we were sort of intrigued because if you've seen the trailers, Ben Wheatley made sort of a 70s throwback. I mean, that's at least what he's trying to do. And those can go haywire and be really bad, or they can be a lot of fun.
I haven't seen the trailer because I purposely try not to watch trailers of movies that are coming out that I might see. I hear it being called like low rent Tarantino. I don't know exactly what that means,
right?
But that's called Free Fire. Let's get to the movies that we did see this week, and the biggest of those is a movie called The Promise, which stars Oscar Isaac and Christian Bale. Before you talk about the movie, I have to say I have liked exactly zero movies that Oscar Isaac has been in. Inside Llewyn Davis, terrible. A Most Violent Year, terrible. Ex Machina, terrible. Star Wars The Force Awakens, okay, it's a Star Wars movie and he happens to be in it. Fine. But Christian Bale, I mean, in the last 10 years, this guy's made The Big Short and American Hustle and The Fighter and three Batman movies that were all pretty good.
Yeah.
So if Christian Bale's in it, I look forward to seeing it. And so we end up with this movie, which also stars an actress named Charlotte Laban, a French actress, who was in a very good movie called The Walk, in which Joseph Gordon-Levitt played Philippe Petit, the guy who walked on the high wire between the towers of the World Trade Center.
She also, in the French and Canadian dubs for Pixar's Inside Out, voiced Joy.
Oh, yeah?
So I think that's kind of a neat little note for her career, because that was a tough part that Amy Poehler played, and she was able to do that. Also, I checked, because I had to triple check this, she is not Simon Le Bon's daughter. Because the whole time I'm watching the movie, I'm like, as a Duran Duran fan, I'm like, is that Simon Le Bon's daughter? It's not.
Okay.
So there you go.
So tell us about the movie.
Well, this is set around 1915 to 1917, so about 100 years ago, which is just crazy to say that, we're just now finding out about something that happened 100 years ago that was, I don't want to say it was hushed up, as it was just sort of glossed over, never really acknowledged by not only the Turkey, but also our own government until pretty recently. In that respect, it kind of reminded me a bit of something like Hidden Figures, like why are we just now seeing this story.
I agree with you.
And same thing with the Promise, which, can I, before I tell you about the story, can I ask you a question that I ask every other critic that I saw there, and nobody could give me a straight answer?
Okay.
What promise does the title refer to?
I have the exact same problem.
Okay.
I believe it's the promise that Oscar Isaac makes to the woman who he
is betrothed.
He is betrothed to,
yes.
But he gets betrothed to her only so he can get the 400 gold coins of her dowry, so he can then leave and go to Constantinople and go to medical school. And the promise is, I will return to you.
Yes.
If that's what the promise is,
it's a bad title.
It's a terrible title.
Well,
and by the way, a terrible part of the story.
It's a terrible title if you don't immediately know upon completion of the film what it refers to. Because every critic gave me a different answer. Most of them said that it's probably his wife. Some of the people said, well, no, it was the promise that Christian Bale's reporter made to report on this when he got back to the States. Except what? That was never even explicitly said.
No.
And then somebody will say, well, it was the promise for the Armenian people to rise again and not be taken out by the genocide.
No, it goes specifically to the scene where he says, she says, do you promise? And he says, yes, I promise.
Well, that's ridiculous.
I agree.
It's a ridiculous title for a movie that I really enjoyed. Let's talk about Oscar Isaac for a moment. I agree with you that Inside Llewyn Davis is a horrible film. I think Force Awakens is one of the weaker Star Wars films, actually, but I loved Ex Machina, and I'm surprised that you didn't like that film. But Oscar Isaac, this is definitely his movie. It's not really a Christian Bale movie. If you're a Christian Bale fan and you're going to see this movie because of him, he's not in it very much. It's not his story. It's Oscar Isaac's story. He is somebody, like you said, he wants to go to medical school. He wants to become a doctor. And when, I was going to say Turkey, but it was the Ottoman Empire at the time, decided to, in their words, relocate the Armenians. And they said, oh, we're just moving them over here. We're certainly not killing all of them. Don't worry. We're not. And he gets mixed up in all of this. And Christian Bale is an American reporter working for the Associated Press. He brings Charlotte Laban with him. She is living in France now, but she is Armenian by birth. And through this heritage, her and Oscar Isaac fall in love. It's kind of fast in the movie, but I also feel like it's probably because they're both very attractive people, so I could kind of buy that they would fall into bed together.
Yeah.
They get separated because of all of the death and destruction that's going on. He eventually, I don't want to give away too much about what he does, but they're pulled back together, and it reminded me of Titanic in that way, that I'm sure that in Titanic, the boat sank. Of course, there's no Jack and Rose, but you have to give us a love story so people will care about that.
Oh, yeah, wait. I have to stop you right there. You don't have to give us a love story to tell us an interesting story about an interesting true story.
Agreed.
History.
But producers think you do.
I know that the Jack and Rose love story in Titanic is why girls went to see, and I didn't say women, I mean girls, teenagers especially, went to see it over and over again because it was Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, and I understand that, but to me, that's what ruined Titanic.
But even in A Fair to Remember, you still had a love story as well. I mean, Titanic didn't start that. It might have popularized it.
All right, I'll give you a better example. Pearl Harbor.
Well, that's a horrible
with
film.
With Ben Affleck and Kate Beckinsale and Josh Hartnett. Film. You have one of the most important dates in American history. Let's tell the story of what happened at Pearl Harbor by making it all about a love triangle.
So this movie does the same thing.
Yes, it does.
But not with a boat sinking and not with Pearl Harbor, but with the very first time the word genocide was used about a situation. Was this Armenian genocide?
Yes.
That until recently, our government didn't even own up to knowing that it happened.
Yep.
Jean Reno, a great actor, has a one-scene cameo as a French Navy man who helps out at the end. And James Cromwell has a 2-minute scene maybe as the U.S. ambassador. Great scene.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this movie because it was like Hidden Figures, a story that I was not aware of. I think it looks beautiful on the big screen. It's not going to look the same when you wait 6 months and stream it on Netflix.
Yep.
The vistas are great. It's got the old Hollywood sort of like a Dr. Zhivago type of feel to it where, you know, there's a ton of extras. So I like that kind of ambitious epic movie making, and I absolutely think it's a story that we all need to become more aware of.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
That being said,
okay.
As much as I like Charlotte Laban in this movie, I think that the love story that they keep going back to as the movie goes on becomes less interesting the more invested you in the actual genocide of these people.
Yes. We're going to tell the story of 1.5 million people being killed because of their ethnicity. A story that we heard far too many times in the 20th century and are continuing to hear too many times
today,
here in the 21st century. 1.5 million people are killed. And by the way, we see scenes of dozens of them from one town being slaughtered and left by a riverside.
Yeah, oh, horrifying.
It's a horrifying scene. Yes. And yet, when one of the more prominent characters in the movie dies towards the end, and I'm not going to give away who that is or anything else, that then is supposed to be considered the saddest thing we've ever seen in our lives.
I completely
agree. What about the dozens of people who were dead there by the riverside, who were shot dead, who were, quote, being repatriated somewhere else, but no, we're in fact being slaughtered by the Ottoman Empire and the Turkish government there.
Early on, I thought we were getting to know these characters, and I didn't mind the love triangle and the pushing and the pulling, but then towards the end, I know the death scene that you're talking about, it's just a wrong note. It's like watching a great band, and then somebody just hits that wrong note because it doesn't fit with the rest of the movie. So that being said, though, I highly recommend this movie, especially if you can find it. I'm sure it's in smaller theaters now, but I think it plays is much better on the big screen.
One other thing I have to say about this movie before we give it our numerical ratings. This movie was written and directed by Terry George, who has made several other movies, the most prominent of which is a 2004 movie he made with Don Cheadle called Hotel Rwanda, which is about the Hutu militia killing thousands of Tutsi refugees in Rwanda. It was effectively the Rwandan genocide story. Now, that movie is a really good story because it concentrates on the genocide story and the work of one man, like Oscar Schindler in Schindler's List, to try to save as many people as possible. There is no love story in Hotel Rwanda. You did not need a love story in The Promise.
Well, it's like Schindler's List. You know, I mean, it focused on one man, but they didn't throw in a love story there.
Correct. So that's what disappointed me. When I found out this guy made that movie, I wonder who in Hollywood steered him away from, I want to make a movie about the Armenian genocide,
right,
to, well, if you're going to do that, you got to go all Pearl Harbor on it and get me a love triangle. And that's what they put in here. And that part of the story is slow to get going and slows down the later parts of the movie. You're exactly right. However, and there's always a however in life. I did like this movie, and I'm giving it a 7 out of 10.
Nice.
What do you give it?
I will give it an 8 out of 10. I think I liked it a little bit more than you did, but the reason why it's not getting a 9 or a 10, which I thought at the beginning of the film it could have that potential to be one of my favorites this year, but still, 8 is pretty strong, and I really hope people go see it.
I have to tell you one side note about this story. If you go on IMDb and look at the ratings for this movie on IMDb, they will be much lower than what we gave it here today. Really? And that's not because the reviewers. That's because people who started voting on this long before it was released, when it had only been shown in 3 movie festivals in the United States. Why did that happen? Because a lot of Armenian genocide deniers went on to IMDb and tried to destroy this movie.
Wow.
Because they don't want the story told. And they went on by the tens of thousands and gave it a 1-star rating. And then some people who are Armenian genocide, I want to tell this story people, went on and gave it tens, but they were kind of outnumbered by the ones who gave it ones. There was one study of this that there were, this is back in October, months before it was officially released, 86,000 ratings for a film that had only been shown at 3 film festivals, 86,000, 55,000 of which were those 1-star ratings.
Wow.
None of those people had seen this movie.
Incredible.
Because there's no way you come out of this thinking that's a 1-star movie.
No.
You may not say it's a 10. You may not agree with us it's a 7 or an 8.
But it's not a 1-star
movie. It is definitely not a 1-star movie. It's no Going in Style.
Or Boss Baby. Dan's not listening.
So don't go based on
I'm paying attention.
Don't go based on the numerical ratings you may see on IMDb or even on Rotten Tomatoes, because that's a whole other issue that's causing that problem. Now, we've got 2 other movies from this week to get to, plus some other showbiz news. But first, we'll take a quick break here on the Big 550 KTRS. Continuing along with the showbiz stuff here on the Big 550 KTRS. Max gave an 8 out of 10 to The Promise. I gave it a 7 out of 10. It is certainly a story that has not been told much on film, the story of the Armenian genocide. We just have a little issue with the fact that they stuck a love story in the middle of it. But it's a very compelling story and one you might enjoy. Let's get to a couple of other movies that are opening today. One is called Unforgettable with Katherine Heigl. Aside from Knocked Up, which may even fit in the category, she has essentially gone off to rom-com land for the last decade or so.
I guess she got huge on Grey's Anatomy, right? That was her first big break, and she left that to go into movies like so many TV actresses have in the past and just crashed and burned miserably.
She made a lot of movies, and she made a lot of money making those movies, but the movies didn't make a lot of money.
Exactly.
That's the problem. Well, now she's back in a movie called Unforgettable. It's a psychological thriller in which she co-stars as Rosario Dawson. And we were talking before about a love triangle. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a love triangle as well, where Katherine Heigl plays the ex-wife.
Okay.
Rosario Dawson plays the new boyfriend.
Okay.
And an actor I don't know named Jeff Stultz plays the man in the middle, who essentially has no purpose in this movie other than to be the man in the middle. This is really all about the ex-wife that Katherine Heigl plays being jealous and has a few mental issues, and that drives the story forward as she tries to go after Rosario Dawson with psychological attacks. You know, she comes off as the nice ex-wife on the outside, on the inside, and when she gets back to her house, she's plotting against her and doing all sorts of things, which I will not divulge here.
Are there any rabbits that get cooked?
No, there are not, but it's funny you should say that, because this is kind of a Nancy Meyers movie by way of Fatal Attraction. It has that kind of psychological element to it. There's also an ex-boyfriend who Dawson had a restraining order against, but it's now expired, so he ends up being part of the plot, especially after Katherine Heigl's character finds out about it.
Oh, so she starts using him basically as like her. Oh, I kind of like that.
Yeah,
okay.
So that's right. You know, like I said, it's got all of the elements, and I will tell you that Katherine Heigl, who usually kind of plays the warm, cozy girlfriend or wife or best friend in all of her other rom-coms. In this one, she plays the ex-wife as an absolute ice queen with a perfectly ironed, flat, straight, blonde hair. She's got a six-year-old daughter by this guy who also has the long, perfectly flat, over-brushed hair. This six-year-old becomes part of the plot and gets caught up in there. Cheryl Ladd is in this movie, almost unrecognizable thanks to over-Botoxing. She's followed the lead of so many actresses in Hollywood who decided, I don't think that my face will look that good as I age, so I'm going to instead turn it into something incredibly plastic. And she's also fine in the role. She plays Katherine Heigl's mother, also a controlling ice queen. Rosario Dawson's best friend is played by Whitney Cummings, who at one point had two sitcoms on the air at the same time. One of them is Two Broke Girls still on the air?
That is still on the air.
And it's also in a lot of reruns. So she's in there as well. It all seems like something you would see on Lifetime, but it's actually very well done. If you go in knowing what to expect, I think you're going to walk out satisfied with what you got off of the screen. It's, Matt, it question, does it Paul. Very, very well.
I like watching a lot of the more trashy Lifetime movies. Things, you know, the classics, like, you know, Mother, May I Sleep with Danger, you know.
Okay.
Some of these are so over the top. There was this whole series of, like, deranged moms that they did for a while that was just fantastic. When I saw the trailers...
Played by Meredith Baxter Byrne.
Of course, all of them. Yes, exactly. And I thought this is great casting for Katherine Heigl, because as much as she tried to be America's sweetheart, she never really became America's sweetheart, and to cast her as a villain, I think, is a great idea.
Yep.
Because there's a lot of people who have, for whatever reason, negative feelings towards her, so now they get to root against her and root for Rosario Dawson, who everybody loves. So I guess my question is, I was hoping you would come on and say, oh, it's fun trash, but it is what it is. You're saying it might actually be a little bit better than that.
Yes, it is. There are some tense scenes that pay off well. There is something that happens towards the end that if you've seen Fatal Attraction, you know is going to happen in this movie as well. I'm really trying not to do any spoilers here, because it's a psychological thriller, and part of the fun of a psychological thriller is there are things in there that are going to happen which maybe you did or didn't expect, but it's how well the movie executes that, and in this case, I think they execute this one quite well. I give it a 6.5 out of 10.
Nice.
It's not a great movie,
right,
but it delivers on what you expect if you go in expecting that.
What did the audience think? Did they eat it up? Did they hoop and holler?
Yes.
Yeah. That's great then.
There were a lot of people who were like, oh, what?
Yeah. Oh, that's fun.
And there was one woman who's like, oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Because, you know, you can see
that.
You see one character creeping up on another. And yeah, I mean, that's what you're going to get if you go see Unforgettable.
Oh, that's great.
So 6.5 out of 10. And then the last movie I have to review this week is an art house movie, an English movie called Their Finest, which you should not confuse with The Finest Hours, a movie that came out at the beginning of last year and ended up on my worst movies of the year list. I'm not going to go back and review that
Chris Pine, right.
Just don't even bother with Their Finest Hours. But you might like Their Finest. This stars a woman named Gemma Arterton. I've never heard of her. Have you?
Yes, she was in Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, which is a great, great B-movie. She was also in a version of Madame Bovary.
She was in a Bond movie as one of the Bond girls.
Yes, she played Strawberry Fields.
Okay, so a lot of people may not know who she is, but she's been around for a little while. The person in this movie who, once I saw he was in it, I said, oh, I have to see that movie, is Bill Nye. who everybody knows from Love Actually. He's the old singer who sings the Christmas song that ends up going to number one.
Yep.
A wonderful character actor. I actually liked him a lot in a movie he made with Emily Blunt called Wild Target. Did you ever see this movie?
No, I've not.
Oh, get it on Netflix or on Amazon. Hmm. Yeah, it's about a hitman who is assigned to kill this young woman.
Okay.
And he actually falls for her instead. And even though he's a meticulous hitman who's very, very good about it and carrying on his own family tradition, she is a wild woman, kind of like Melanie Griffith was in Something Wild with Jeff Daniels. And they go off on a very, very different adventure than he's ever experienced before. And it's a lot of fun. It's called Wild Target.
Wild Target.
You might want to see that. So,
what did you think about him in the Pirates movies? He was under all that CGI and all these, I'm the squid guy.
I haven't seen him.
You haven't seen him?
No.
It's just funny because you know him as a character actor, but most people probably know him from those giant Pirates films. He was the squid guy.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about, Ian?
I didn't see
him. You're not talking about the Pirates of the Caribbean movies?
Yes, I am. With Johnny Depp.
Oh, okay.
He was the Flying Dutchman guy. I can't think of his name right now.
Oh, the guy with guy with all the
Bill Nye.
All the snakes on his face and
The squid. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I can't think of his character name right now, which is ridiculous.
Well, but I like him a lot, and because he was in this movie, I was looking forward to it.
Davy Jones, thank you, Dan Struss.
There you go. The story of Their Finest takes place in 1940 London. They were in World War II. We were not in it yet. It's a story of a woman named Katrin, who is hired by the Ministry of Information's film division for what she thinks is a secretarial spot. But the film division, during World War II, wanted to make uplifting movies, morale-boosting movies, particularly for female audiences, and particularly for a country that was being bombed by the Nazis. So she goes in thinking she's going to get a secretarial spot. She ends up being on the writing team. And they're trying to come up with uplifting stories. And so she finds the story of two twin sisters who tried to help soldiers during the Battle of Dunkirk. And they love this story because it has female stars. And they get Bill Nighy, who plays this ex-matinee idol, who's now in his 60s. And they enlist him as the uncle. And they hire some young hunk to play the lead character in this movie. And she works with the two male screenwriters, one of whom she develops a close friendship with. This despite the fact that she is pretending that she's married to an artist that she lives with. She does live with the guy, but she's been telling everybody that she's Mrs. whatever, because she just doesn't want to deal with the mess that can come with explaining to people that she's living with a guy in London in 1940 when mores were very, very different. Now, that part of the story that I just told you, completely unnecessary. Just like the love story, the love triangle is unnecessary in The Promise. The story of the artist that she lives with but isn't married to, completely unnecessary. And the movie comes back to it and it slogs the movie down a little bit.
Hmm.
But the rest of the movie about her working on making this movie and the way they show you the making of the movie and a couple of movie secrets that they divulge and the way movies looked in 1940 is exactly right. They get it right. There's just the right level of goofiness going on in here. Bill Nye is wonderful. He at one point is forced to help coach an American war hero who's been enlisted to be in the movie because the Americans want to have an American in this movie if they're going to show it. So they say, get this guy who is an American war hero, put him in the movie. He has no acting experience and is so wooden you wouldn't believe it. And yet Bill Nye is asked to coach him, and it kind of works out because he's involved and because she can write better dialogue for the guy. As I said, except for the love story, everything else in this movie is very well done, including the bombings and the air raids and the fear that Londoners were exhibiting in 1940 when, you know, they were at war and they were losing the war.
What's the overall tone of this movie? Because you're saying a lot of things that make me think it might be more lighthearted. There's some humorous stuff, but I mean, this backdrop is obviously very serious.
Let's call it a drama with some comedic elements.
Mm.
The comedic elements mostly come from Bill Nye, but there are a couple of other things that go on that I don't want to give away that make this movie quite worthwhile. I'm giving Their Finest a 7.5 out of 10. Again, not one of my best movies of the year, but a movie that if you look for it, and you find it, I think you'll enjoy it. It is not nearly as serious as The Promise,
right,
which turns into a horrible war movie. I mean, it's a movie about a horrible war where over a million people were killed. This, while being about World War II and taking place in World War II, is really about these people who are trying to make a movie that will appeal to a specific audience at a specific time, and they get it right. So 7.5 out of 10 for Their Finest, which is opening around St. Louis today. Now, I'm not a comic book movie guy. You are.
I am.
So I've got to ask you a question about the decision this week to hire Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck to direct the Captain Marvel movie. But before you say anything, I have to say I'm a little biased
you
in their
biased.
Favor.
I thought of you.
Because they directed Mississippi Grind, in which I co-star with Ben Mendelsohn, Ryan Reynolds, and Sienna Miller.
Oh,
and
yeah.
By co-star, I mean I have a two-minute scene where I don't say anything.
But I when they were announced all over Twitter a couple of days ago, my first thought was of you, because I thought, well, does this mean that Brie Larson, who's going to be playing Captain Marvel, can now come on your show? I mean, she's an Oscar winner. I'm sure that you know you
we
guys
have
this in common
now. We
would love
Brie on the show. As soon as you line her up, we'll have her.
Okay, I'll do that.
Give her to me.
I'll just keep dropping your name.
Okay,
I'll just say, like, but Paul Harris, Mississippi Grind, and the directors.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a really interesting decision to take.
Now, who is Captain Marvel?
Okay, do you want the long version, or do you want the short version?
Give me 60 seconds.
Okay, it's a Marvel Comics character. It's sort of like their version of Green Lantern, which means she's a space cop, basically. She's got powers, which means she can fly. She's got super strength. She got these from an alien that she met, and she absorbed his powers. But she's an Air Force pilot. Her name is Carol Danvers. And so she's been very rigid and very Air Force, you know, and military her whole life. And now that she has these powers, she has to kind of reconcile being an agent of one instead of an agent of many. And so she eventually joins the Avengers and finds her team dynamic there in the books right now.
Have we seen her in the Avengers movies?
We haven't, because they just cast Brie Larson. She was going to have a cameo in Age of Ultron, but they decided to wait, and they're trying to perfect the script right now. They're a little worried about the comparisons to Green Lantern, because that story is very similar. It's also an Air Force pilot.
Wait a second.
Got powers.
Was Green Lantern the one that Seth Rogen
No. That's Green Hornet. Green Lantern was Ryan Reynolds, and it bombed horribly at the box office.
Okay.
And it was an Air Force pilot who met an alien and got superpowers. So they might switch around that origin story, because they think audiences are kind of sick of it.
Do you think that they're deciding to make this movie now because female superheroes are becoming the thing? You know, not only did you have Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow, but you also have Gal Gadot in Wonder Woman, which is coming out later on this year. Is this the new trend?
Well, you know, this movie was announced about 2 years ago, so I think it might have been ahead of a lot of that trend. But Marvel, in the books for about the last 7 years, have really been trying to position Captain Marvel as their go-to female heroine. Because you mentioned Wonder Woman, that's DC Comics' go-to. I mean, when you think DC, you think Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. That's their trinity. Marvel doesn't have that. They've got the Avengers, they've got Iron Man, they've got Spider-Man. It's a whole lot of guys. They don't have that great female hero. So they got a new writer on Captain Marvel a couple years ago, rebooted the book. It's a great book, wonderful art. That's the book that Brie Larson was reading to prepare. And I think what they want to do is, that's why they announced that before a Black Widow or anybody else. They want her to be their Wonder Woman.
Well, Anna will be the first female director of one of these big superhero movies.
Nope, incorrect. Patty Jenkins wrapped on Wonder Woman, and that's coming out in a couple months.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Anna and Ryan had better hurry up, because this thing has already got a release date. I don't know how they're going to do this. It's going to come out on March 8th, 2019. That's less than 2 years. How can you make a movie in 23 months?
And they announced it like 2 years ago. The gestation period on this has been crazy. But I think they really want to get it right. And I do like the character of Carol Danvers a lot. I think Brie Larson is an inspired choice. But I did. I thought of you first, Paul. I was like, oh, look, it's the directors that work with Paul.
Yeah. I sat by my phone all day yesterday waiting for them to call to ask if I wanted to do
a
silent
movie. There's 23 months
until
you can get it. You know, tell them you were their good luck charm on Mississippi Grind.
Well, unfortunately, the movie didn't do that well, so that's maybe not the phrase to use.
Oh, okay.
But I blame A24, the studio that released it. Certainly not my performance.
No, of course not.
I mean,
maybe you could like fire Carol Danvers from the Air Force or something. Like, you can do something to set her on the path to becoming Captain Marvel.
They have to write a scene where she plays poker. That's all I do for Anna and Ryan.
Is that what you did in Mississippi Crime?
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
TV stuff. The new season of Silicon Valley is back on HBO this Sunday night. Anybody else been watching this show besides me?
I need to catch up.
Yeah.
Yes. It's I watched season one, but yes, I need to.
Well, this is season four, so you got a couple that you got to catch up on. The rest of us can watch it Sunday night. Also, today on Netflix, Bill Nye the Science Guy saves the world and takes on science deniers, I'm hearing. I haven't watched any of the episodes, but I like him a lot, and I'll watch that. Monday night on Channel 9 and the other PBS stations across the country and the Independent Lens series, they are showing a documentary called The Last Laugh, with comedians talking about when you can joke about the Holocaust. Of course, Mel Brooks appears in this, and he says he never did any jokes about the Holocaust. And then they say, wait a second, you did The Producers, which has that song Springtime for Hitler. And he says, I joked about the Nazis. I didn't joke about the Holocaust. At which point, I thought they should bring Sean Spicer in to explain the difference. So Mel Brooks is in this, Rob Reiner, Sarah Silverman. Also, Robert Clary, or Robert Clary, who was in Hogan's Heroes. Remember he played the French guy in Hogan's Heroes?
Yeah, speaking of making fun of the Holocaust,
he's a Holocaust survivor.
Really?
Wow.
And went on Hogan's Heroes, and he says in the documentary, which I've seen, he says, people ask me, how could you do a movie about a concentration camp? And he says, Hogan's Heroes is not about a concentration camp. It's not about Jews being rounded up, which is what happened in concentration camps.
Prisoners of war.
This is prisoners of war, yeah. Exactly. And we were able to make the Nazis look foolish. So that's why I agreed to do that, because with my experience, anything that made them look silly was a good thing. And then the final thing I want to mention is, because Alec Baldwin is not already doing enough between Saturday Night Live and his documentary, his autobiography, and his podcast, and all these other projects he's involved in, he is taking over Robert Osborne's spot on TCM.
On The Essentials.
Yes.
Yes.
And in a press release out yesterday, he announced his first three guests to be kind of guests of, you know, pick a movie, you can come on and you can talk about it. David Letterman, Tina Fey, and William Friedkin, who directed The Exorcist.
Man. Oh, man.
But Friedkin chose The Quiet Man, which is a John Wayne movie. Tina Fey chose Rear Window. Letterman chose The Bad and The Beautiful. I don't know why, but that'll be on the new series on TCM starting on May 6th. With Alec Baldwin in the Robert Osborne part.
Also, I've got breaking news here that should set all of our minds at ease. In case you were wondering, The Rock and Vin Diesel currently have no beef, and they will do another Fast and Furious movie together.
What
you guys
relief.
Know? There's no beef.
You know what that means? They're going to get to 10 movies, and you're going to have to go out and binge watch them.
That's exactly right.
That's the showbiz stuff for this week on the Big 550 KTRS.